Next question from on Twitter from JM Images. What long-term project trip has yielded the greatest disappointment? And in brackets he says, sorry, but hearing heroes fail cheers me up. From John.
Thank you, John. Right. Well, I, yeah, I, d in a way, the it would be ridiculous for, I think, for me to think I've been successful in anything. I mean, that may sound strange, but I always think that I could do better, and everything feels a little bit like work in progress in
Yeah.
some ways. Doing Scotland's Coast and Scotland's Mountains, which are both books of which I am proud of, but both projects were fraught with the difficulties that were that accompanied working in Scotland itself, which is it feels like a battle with the weather a lot
Yes.
of the time
Yeah.
and the conditions, and both on both occasions there were ideas that I wanted to work on, there were images I expected to make that I never made. Because of those conditions, not playing ball. It was Scotland's mountains particularly, which was in a way a step up in difficulty from Scotland's coast. I learned fairly early on that I wasn't going to actually be able to create these some mythical images that I
Yeah.
kind of had in my mind, and that I would have to simply deal with what was there, and that for me the learning journey was actually not to have these masterpiece images at the forefront of my mind, but simply to be, to quote a kind of Zenish phrase, be in the present moment and to accept it and to simply go with the flow. And so in a way that was, I suppose you could say that was a success discovering that. But does what I'm trying to answer John's point by saying that don't think that just because the outcome looks like it was all intended, that it was
Yes,
intended, because
yeah.
it wasn't really. And in many ways, the project for me will always be ongoing. And Scotland's Mountains as a book is a snapshot in time for Joe Cornish in a
Yeah.
way. That's the reality of it. And I'm proud of it as far as it goes in that sense. I think one of the difficulties with photographers and photography is that there tends to be this pursuit of the, I mean, I think the common parlance for it these days is the hero picture, isn't it?
Yeah.
That somehow I think Alex Nail, if we go back to him, Alex has made a few of those images. I hope you won't mind me saying that. They're terrific images and great, credit to him for finding himself in those places and achieving what he has done in places that require great endeavour to have reached them. I actually tend not to look for those images so much anymore. Not that I wouldn't be happy to receive them if they
Yeah.
came to me, but rather to, but actually simply to go out with my camera in a kind of what if state of mind and to discover what I find and to try and fuse the elements of the day with the process of the walk and what I discover. So it's in a way as open-ended a process as it possibly can be.
Is this something you've discovered over time that a lot of photographers find it difficult to work in certain conditions? I know we were talking earlier about the intense blue sky with sun at midday. As you've learned more about using those conditions, you become a happier photographer in many ways, and more productive.
Well, I think that's a good point. I think there's a number of ways of being more being happier. But I think before that comes this consideration, which is that how many pictures do you want to take every day? Because I think one of our problems generally is that this doesn't really answer John's question, does it? Unfortunately, but is an interesting
I think
point.
we're allowed to meander.
Okay, is that we. Is I think we all tend to, those of us who are shooting digitally tend to shoot too many pictures. And one of the lessons that I learned shooting large format is that that you don't need to shoot many pictures because you try to make a picture, not necessarily that's a masterpiece, but that distills an idea. And that process isn't necessarily made by shooting thousands and then selecting the best from thousands. It's about being very, very, very focused and aware of where you are, of the moment, aware of the limitations of the process, aware of your personal journey, aware of the emotional state that you're in, and developing that awareness. It is, in that sense, a form of meditation. And I don't think that's a pretentious thing to say. It is a factual thing to say. And that coming into focus is actually what, in many ways, being a photographer is about. And when you start to learn that habit, you can escape from the yoke of shooting thousands of photographs, because I can tell you it is not an editing process. Editing is important, but you do the editing before. Editing is important after you take the pictures too, by the way. But what I'm saying is, it's not about selecting one picture that's worked out of thousands. And I think most people who are on landscape will know that. But about learning to be selective, and the more you can do that in camera, the better.
Yeah.
And so that's the first point. And then, of course, with time, you become more and more aware of the fact that conditions will dictate how successful you can be, because the language of light, the language of colour especially too, which is so much part of the language of light, as well as your own agenda, will teach you that if you go out in the middle of the day in an exposed environment with a high sun and a blue sky, that you're going to feel like you're pushing a very, very heavy hill, stone up a very steep hill.
Yeah.
It's really, really difficult to make pictures that have atmosphere and that have meaning and even a useful descriptive value in those environments, because of the way light works, you know, without going down a lot of detail about that.
Okay, thank you very much. And the next question is from Tom Wilkinson from Twitter. I'd like to know where Joe sees himself being in 10 years' time in terms of his work.
Well, Tom, I don't know if that's based on having a business vision or something like that. I know a lot of people do like to plan their lives ahead, and probably it's a good thing in business. I have to confess that I have no such vision at all for the future. I really, really don't. And I'm much more interested in trying to live each day well, I think, and that's I don't even manage to do that a lot of the time, because I'm especially a few lessons I've learned this year have made me think, actually, yes, that is above all the main thing, is to live each day well, whether you're photographing or not.
The journey.
Yeah, and I think if you think that your photography, and we could get into this in detail later, but if you think of yourself as an artist, as a photographer, which, you know, without wishing to be pretentious, but I do think that from my point of view, what am I trying to do? I try to make art. Whether you think it is or not, it's another matter, but that's my goal, and I'm not, believe it or not, I mean, I try to make a living out of it, but I don't put my photography as the principal way of making a living, by the way. I make my photographs mainly for me, and I see it as an artistic process. The idea of having a 10-year plan, or where am I going to be in 10 years' time, would kind of seem to imply that I might actually have a plan at any rate. So the quick answer is no.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really, really don't know. I would like to continue to remain fit, healthy and active, and, you know, which is where I am at the moment, you know, my mid-50s, very fortunate to be in good health, and I'm, you know, very conscious of that, and I feel in a way it's my responsibility to remain so for as long as I can, to continue to challenge myself photographically, creatively, to continue to to do what I can to help other people in that process as well, because for selfish reasons I get a lot out of that and enjoy it, and also because I feel part of a community, both at home in my family and my immediate the village where I live, but also in the wider community of photographers. I do think there is such a thing.
Yes.
I know that it's not very fashionable sometimes to talk about that, but working as we do on landscape, we realise that there are a lot of us have a lot in common and shared goals and endeavour, and there's a lot of support and encouragement that comes from that, and I think it's important to be part of that, so I'd like to continue that.
Thank you. Axman3UK, not sure who it is, but this is from Twitter. I'd like to know, if Joe could only make one more image, what would it be and what would be his vision?
It's a
tough one.
It is tough, isn't it? It's not really very, in some ways, I mean, it's a nice question, but it's kind of not a very nice question, because it sort of thinks, oh dear, if I fell over with a illness or whatever. I think that there is I've always been interested in landscapes that are cold, so there's part of me that would like to, I feel I've got a lot of unfinished business with ice, and as it happens, I'm going to Antarctica in a few weeks' time. So, looking forward to doing a few things maybe I've never done then. I love sculpture, by the way, and ice and sculpture seem to me kind of part of the same kind of aesthetic. And the power of form. Michelangelo is my favourite artist, I find great inspiration from the forms of nature, and ice is this kind of ever-changing abstraction, so that there's a lot in it for me to work with and play with, and the fact that it's semi-translucent and all of those things, it's just the most magical substance, I think, on the planet in many ways. So yes, lots there to, perhaps that would be it, but if you took this question as a kind of elegiac one, if you could make one image that would somehow fulfill or distill your life in photography or in terms of what you believe as a human being, then it would I'll probably be very predictable and say that actually what I would like to do is to make an image that combined the minutiae of the living world with the imaginative realm of the mountains, because I have lived such a lot of my imaginative life, not just actually in the mountains, but when I've been at home, thinking about mountains and about the prospect of mountains, that they are those kind of lift up thine eyes to the hills, and I'm not a religious person, by the way, in that sense, but to me they are the kind of inspiration, the gesture of the mountain, and I know it's a cultural thing that I've received over the years, but the notion of this magical realm of snow and incredible views and light and something and danger,
the sense of the sublime,
all of those things. I recently had a chance to scrutinise a lot of images by my friend Alan Hinks, as you have. Alan is the first Briton to climb all of the world's 8,000 metre peaks, and he's a very good photographer as well, and some of those pictures are just, they are literally sublime, and it was a real reminder to me of why I love mountains, so the things that happen at high altitude, and or even just in Scotland at high up, for instance, being on Benmore Coigac and seeing the Brocken Spectre, and looking down on a sea of mist and seeing beautiful mountains emerging from that sea of mist. So the realm of the mountains represents the kind of lofty aspirations of the human spirit, but the physical tactility of the living planet, the plants and the flowers and the animals that make up our daily life are also equally important to me. So could you make an image that synthesized those elements in one, and yes, I think one can, and And in a way, that would be what I would probably look to do. So I would shoot from the lowlands to the mountains.
Yeah.
But where? Well,
a few choices.
Yes, there are a few choices. I don't want to be pinned down at this point.
And the next question from Mark Sheffield, a bit of an abstract question, or statement, could it be? Process and creativity, exclamation mark.
Process and creativity. The words process and creativity are absolutely fundamental to what we do in photography. But you know what? I think they're fundamental in the arts. And I think it's a fascinating topic. I actually don't worry about it nearly as much as I used to. You know, is photography an art? You know, discuss.
Yeah.
Is this going to be your kind of PhD on? Tim, it could be. It's a process is inherently tied up, I think, with photography a lot. It's considered in the realm of art as a very technical form. Other artists are very conscious of the fact that photographers are very obsessed about gear.
Yeah.
And I think they tend to kind of despise that in a way. So it's kind of slightly sad for us that in many ways we're all a little bit guilty of it. But part of the reason for that obsession with process is because, for me and I think for many photographers who photograph landscape, the subject matter, the power of the subject matter is absolutely the heart of what we do. And the power of the subject matter is it's the illusion of reality in the photograph, the presence of the landscape, whether it's a close-up or a wide view. And a lot of the presence of it is to do with an optical trick that is photography.
Yeah.
And the way that a lens renders the reality of what we see in terms of light and form, texture and colour, in the photograph, in the two-dimensional representation, whether it's on a screen or on a print or in a book or whatever it may be. And we all know that the quality of the lens, film, stroke, sensor system is an indivisible part of that. Okay, so what that means is if we're going to recreate that experience of being out on the mountain, on the beach, by the lakeside, where it may be, with great physical presence, with authority, we need a good camera and a good lens and a good workflow. So all the technical side of it matters to us, hence the kind of predilection for very high quality lenses, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Process is important. So process and creativity. Well, oddly enough, I think the other thing about photography is that it isn't like human vision. So we aren't actually literally recreating what we see. We're going through an interpretive process. And that is where our personal decision-making reflects our creativity. And that is very, very important. And you can see it as completely separate to process. And I think a lot of people would like to make that distinction. I know a lot of artists would. I mean, artists typically, especially when you're a student, having been an art student, are, technique is just technique, it's all about the, whatever, the spirit, the imagination.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it isn't. That's an illusion. Creativity is inherently, I'm being very dogmatic now, and it's not like me to do that, but is tied up with process. You cannot escape it. Every painter who has ever lived depends on technique. They depend on process. They depend on the quality and the nature of the prints, the paints that they use, and on the paper, the canvas, the wall surface, whatever it may be. Your Banksy, you might say, well, you've developed a technique that comes from using aerosols on brick walls. Now, that his style, his creativity, is directly a reflection of the techniques that he's developed to be effective, to be successful on a brick wall. And he's a genius at doing that. If you're doing the Sistine Chapel, you know, to refer to Michelangelo again, you require a technique that has evolved out of using that's been mastered by many before you. You still have to learn the process, how to get the colours to sing, you know, that way.
Well, the history of colour is all about science and it, craft.
Very much so, and the types of colours and the things that they were trying to do, the limitations indeed of the colour. You look at Leonardo da Vinci's oil paintings, and we tend to think that they're all very deliberate. Well, A, they've changed over time, but B, they were limited by the colours that were available to him at the time, and he developed his colour style from that process. You know, the layering process of varnishes that typically painters like him used is also something that's technically based, and his vision, his imaginative realm, is a reflection of that technique. And anybody who thinks differently is deluding themselves. So photography, photographic creativity, is also inherently a reflection of the process, both the science of photography itself, the limits of the materials and the methods and the equipment that's available to you at the time. And I think that's a very important lesson to learn, and actually a great springboard, because you can use the limitations and the oddities of the photographic process, the whole out of focus, in focus, the weird and wacky colours that arise, the fact that you can manipulate, if you wish, you know, the process in so many different ways, or you can use the manipulative power to try to recreate what you saw. Whichever way you choose to go, it is all part of process. Process and creativity, to me, are intrinsically linked, and importantly so.
Next question from Guy Oberton, and I think we'll just mention this and come back to it, but he says, more information and images on Joe's trip to India, pretty please. and I know you've done a talk on this already at the gallery, and is there a possibility of another talk at the gallery, in which case we can come along and record
it? I hope so, yes. Yeah, I'll keep my fingers crossed on that one, but yeah, we are discussing it.
Yeah, and if not, then we'll try and get a session with that, so...
I'm not sure if Guy's, he says pretty please, I'm not sure if he wants pretty pictures, I suspect not, so maybe that's a misprint.
Magnus Lindbom, would be interesting to know how he thinks his images have changed over time from beginning to today, in a short version.
In a short version, thanks Magnus, how long have I got? I think that yes, my images have changed, and I also think there is a cyclical process in it. And I look back on my work as a student and see the kind of proto-style that of my work then, and I can see a direct link. When I first went out with a camera, before even my degree show, which are the pictures I tend to look at now, but the first pictures I took kind of seriously, quote-unquote, creatively with my first camera, were of trees in the woodland on the campus at Reading University, where I was a student, and I barely used a camera before that, and they were looking up into the canopy of the trees. They were looking at the shapes of the trees that had fallen over, and the radial patterns of the roots that were lying on the ground. And my ideas were springing from my interest in nature and the shapes of nature. And when I was doing my degree show, and this is what I was 20, I suppose, 21, my pictures were of light shining off shapes on the sand in beaches or of rocks. And what I do now, I still do exactly the same thing, same subject matter, in some ways, in the same ways, but with perhaps more, a greater understanding, I would hope, of certainly of the aesthetic possibilities of the medium, and with an eye to trying to emphasise that there is a kind of metaphoric or an anthropic connection, because my agenda has become broader and perhaps a little bit less personal, in the sense that, you know, when you're a student, you're kind of not quite sure what you're doing. You're trying to find something that will justify your existence as a student. Whereas now I'm more confident in my goal to connect personally to the subject, but to try and share that feeling of connection through the way that I design my compositions and use light. And that's a quite a deliberate thing, but in some ways it's changed and yet it hasn't changed.
Next question from John Dunn. I'd love to understand a little more about the business side of landscape photography. How does Joe approach commissions, tender day rates versus fixed rate licensing and exclusivity, etc.? Any insights into this topic, which I've never seen discussed for our genre of photography before, anywhere, would be illuminating.
You know, you always want to be a pioneer, don't you? You'd like to be, I suppose, in the creative realm. And it'd be quite ironic if I was the first person to talk about the business of being a landscape photographer, you know, for public consumption.
Yeah.
I think there's a number of photographers in the UK who do commissions. Not a huge number, but there are a number. I know quite a few, and not all of whom are full-time professionals, by the way, but actually in many ways successful semi-pros or retired people who've been successful enough to get asked to do commission work. So it's a very big, it's a wide cross-section of, you know, you could say the old school of hard knocks, and that would be myself and Colin Pryor and Dave Noton, for example.
Yeah.
My guess is that we're all somewhat different in the way that we do things. My approach to commissions is, if I try to answer that question as directly as possible, is, and I don't get many, I only have a few people who I work for, is first of all to find out very clearly what somebody wants, because it's very, very easy in photography to disappoint clients.
Yeah.
And that's the truth. And the difficulty with me, you know, let's say one thing that comes up for me quite a lot is I quite often get asked to, can you photograph by private clients, can you photograph such and such a place because I have fond memories or recollections of it from when I was a child, you know, and now this person has perhaps enough money to buy a personal commissioned work, which is a lovely idea, and my instinct is always to say, yes, I'd love to do that for you, you know, and to try and think, well, how long is it going to take me? And of course, you've got to try and value your time that way. I've found from experience of doing those that they really, really rarely work.
Yeah.
It's really difficult because however great your work is, this person will have an idea or an imaginary memory.
You're photographing their vision.
And you can't do it.
Yeah.
So you've got, you almost, even if they're very magnanimous and kind, and you do your level best and you come up with, say, you charge, you know, X amount for your time, you know, whatever that may be, for a day's work, and you go out and do that picture and then spend quite a bit of time on post-production or so on and so forth, the chances are you've got a very high chance that you're going to disappoint them. If they're magnanimous or if they're very open-minded, it can still work. But I tend to shy away from them now.
Yeah.
So the sort of commissions I generally do, if we get back to the question, are for, say, the British Tourist Authority, also called Visit Britain, and the National Trust. They're my two biggest clients. And fortunately, I have lots and lots of mileage with them already. So
you know roughly what they're...
I do. I know where what they're about, and they know what I'm about, and so we're able to work usually without. They don't need to brief me too thoroughly or anything like that. I know what they want, and sometimes, especially with the trust, over the years we've had to have discussions about how their needs are changing with time. So that's fine. That's what you'd expect in that. Sometimes means I have to be more creative, I have to be more open-minded, or I have to tackle something I don't necessarily want to do to make sure that they get value for money. So the next point to say is, for me as a working man, it's really important to me that I feel my clients get value for money.
Yeah.
That's my primary goal almost. And I try to do that by firstly, give them what they want. Secondly, give them more than what they want. If you can do the primary objective is to give them what they want, but then you know, secondly, to give them, if you can also give them more, then that's great, because clearly that's good PR for you. How do you do that? Well, you might think that means you go out with a predetermined vision of what they want and you do it for them. But, you know, the weird thing is I still make those pictures for me.
Yeah.
So when I'm using my camera and my tripod out on the hill or wherever it may be, photographing for these clients, while I may have in the back of my mind this must be palatable and understandable, as in it's not too obscure,
yeah,
I'm still photographing to satisfy my own sense of trying to make a great picture or a good picture or one that's at least got interesting qualities, that has a narrative, that has a point to it.
And that's presumably because they're not hiring you because they can't use a camera themselves. They're hiring you because
they want to coin a phrase, they want your vision.
Yeah.
And every photographer, I believe, you know, in that position, if they're being commissioned, should try to stick to that principle, because trying to second guess what somebody else wants, rather in the model I mentioned earlier, is almost bound to be doomed to fail. Yes. So you've got to be yourself.
Beware the client who says, oh, it's just an open brief.
Well, in some ways, especially if you don't really know them. So try to get absolutely clear about that with them. I mean, a commission is an honour, you know, really, to be commissioned to do a photograph of somebody, especially if it's an artistic commission as opposed to, say, shooting a wedding or a portrait. Some portraits can be seen in that way. They may well wish to have your style, by the way, but we're talking about landscape photography here. And it's ordinarily, I would say, well, for me, it's because there's an artistic component that they're looking for your artistry. And you have to remember that. And I hope that answers the question.
I think so. I mean, the other questions are about rates.
Rates and licensing. Well, briefly, tender. Well, you've got to, so day rates, you've got to decide what you're happy to work for. Unfortunately, these days, it's not very much, because if you think you're worth thousands and thousands of pounds a day, that's great. But will your client think you are? Well, I'm sorry, but most clients these days know that they're in a buyer's market.
Yeah.
And they probably think that they can get somebody who's still pretty damn good for a few hundred quid a day.
Yeah.
That's the reality. And they're probably right. So you have to be mindful of that. Licensing and exclusivity. I strongly feel that, oh, by the way, yes, day rates versus fixed rates. I think you ought to be careful of fixed rates, but if your client has in mind, well, this is our budget, you've then got to decide, is that doable,
yeah,
in a way that's agreeable to me and I'm not going to end up resenting doing it. So that's clear. Licensing and exclusivity. Personally, I would say that any photographer of my generation would wish and expect to keep the copyright. But saying that, I think you have to be flexible. And if you believe that ultimately the client is really, really keen to have the copyright and the money's reasonably good in other respects, well, you've got to balance that against what your needs are in your daily life.
Yeah.
And there are times when, yes, you have to say, okay, fine.
But where possible, make it some sort of rights-managed process.
Yes, I personally would say always keep the copyright,
yeah,
and give them a license to use that's generous,
yeah,
but that is limited.
Yeah, not in perpetuum.
No, not never into perpetuity.
Yeah.
You should always aim to keep the rights to your photography, because that is part of the underlying philosophy that led to the drawing up of the Copyright Act of 1989 as it is. And that philosophy is based on what you might call natural justice,
yeah,
and which it is to say that the creator is the originator and the owner of the work.